You've been hearing in the news this morning this large garage, huge garage in Charleswood that's got people wound up. We'll talk to a man who lives near it and get his thoughts. He's not happy. Carolyn Klassen coming up after 11:30. We've got lots to get to talk with her about. But I want to begin with kind of a fun subject. All the shows today here on CGOB are looking at Lost and Found, and CGOB content producer Tyson Rewicki joins us now after phoning around to some of the Lost and Founds in Winnipeg. Tyson, good morning.
Good morning, Hal. How are we doing?
Good. Excellent. What did you find? What are people losing, and are people claiming the stuff that's been lost?
Well, Hal, people are losing quite a bit of things, and there's even some things that I couldn't even imagine some people had lost them. And I'll play a clip from Adam Cunliffe, went and visited the Winnipeg Transit Lost and Found, and just kind of took a peek around and saw some of the things that they saw. But I don't know about you, Hal, but I lose everything. Like, I am, especially on the golf course, like, if it's in my pocket, it's probably not making it back home. And yeah. So it's just funny to see, you know, kind of all the stuff that people leave behind. Like, there's some things like keys, wallets, phones, and you see the amount that that Winnipeg Transit had, at least, and some of these other lost and founds. And you kind of wonder, especially the key front, like, you know, don't people need these? Like, it's funny to see all these things that we consider essential kind of not be in someone's life for that point. And then, so I asked Adam Cunliffe, he's a supervisor of customer service with Winnipeg Transit. Like, how exactly do they determine what goes in the lost and found?
Anything that is lost on the bus will come here to the lost property office. So no matter if it's a very valuable item or one mitt, we will bring it here and allow people an opportunity to come claim their item. We don't discriminate. Everything does come here that is found on a bus.
And yeah, so like I mentioned, there was wallets, phones, I mean, tons of water bottles. And so if you ever think that you lost something on Winnipeg Transit on one of the buses, you have about a month to get it back. And otherwise, if you don't get it back, they're going to donate it to a bunch of local charities, you know, things like non-perishable groceries. They don't donate your wallets, your phones, so don't worry about that. Your personal information's not getting donated to local charities, but not, things like non-perishable groceries, clothing, that all goes to a good cause. So it's really good to see that some of these lost and founds are still making use of these items, even if people aren't claiming them.
Mm-hmm. I got a question for you. And listen, we all lose keys or our phone, like the normal, usual, boring stuff. I'm going to open the phones on this in a second. What's the coolest or weirdest thing you ever found? Any, as you phoned around, checked around, talked to Winnipeg Transit and others, any strange, unique items?
Oh, yeah. There was some really interesting ones. Adam mentioned to me that that someone had left behind a fish tank with fish in it.
So there was a bus.
Oh yeah. So like pretty much an aquarium was left on the bus, and so Winnipeg Transit actually, that was their kind of office pet for a while. They brought the aquarium back to the office, and they kind of kept it in the front row, and they kept it for as long as the fish lasted. But Adam also told me one other thing that they found on the bus, which was one of the kind of, it really, really, he just had no idea how to react when it came in.
I think one of them would be someone left a prosthetic leg on a bus. So that one did get claimed in the end. The story was it was going in for repairs. Once we heard the story, it did make a lot of sense. So yeah, it would probably be one of the more unique items.
So they're one for one on those. So that's always a good thing that whoever left that on the bus got it back. But yeah, like it really is interesting to kind of to see what kind of things get left behind. You think about Canada Life Center, and they've actually partnered with Winnipeg Police to work on a program that's commencing today. And, you know, like single shoes, AirPods, it's just, you could go on and on about the things that people leave behind.
You have to think, though, with the aquarium, a full-blown aquarium, water and fish, you have to think that that wasn't really lost. I think somebody decided, you know what, I'm tired of carrying this thing. I'm just going to leave it here and let transit worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, it blows my mind for someone to even bring an aquarium on the bus. You know, I think maybe that there'd be a pet store you could toss it to. Maybe it's just something that could repurpose it a little bit better. But it's nice to know that in the end, those fish had a nice home and they were taken well care of.
Yeah. The prosthetic lady, I kind of understand that, I guess. You're taking, well, I don't know. It all seems kind of strange to me. You said you're a person who tends to lose things. I'm not. I usually have a pretty good handle on everything that I've got with me, and I take it along. Now, I think everybody's, you know, lost a wallet or a set of keys at some point, but I'm pretty good at it. Any cool or weird things you personally, Tyson, have found?
Well, actually, just recently, I was moving out of my parents' house, and I had had this hat from Florida when I was about 17, and it's just a super basic, it's no brand, nothing else on it except a Marlin, and it was my favorite hat, and I couldn't find it forever, and it was just, it was eating me up, pal. I was choked about it, and then was looking around my old room, went through a couple bags, and there it was at the bottom, and it made my year, made my 2024, so that's kind of my story on that. But you know, yep, it's just a lot of golf clubs too. I lose a lot, yep, of golf clubs, and that's, mm-hmm, that hurts the bank account as well.
Yeah. All right, Tyson Rewicki, thank you very much for this. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Hal.
Now, I would argue that Tyson finding that hat after many years, it was never really lost because it was still in his room or in his home, right? I mean, I look at lost items as lost. Like, where is it? Never to be found, or if you find it, it's certainly not at the bottom of a closet. So as I said, I want to have some fun with this today. Open up the phone, 780-6868. What's the coolest or weirdest thing you have ever found as we look at lost and found on the shows today? 780-6868. You can call or text that number, and you can email me as well, hal@cgob.com. Here's one from Wayne. I'll get us going with a text message here from Wayne. Hal, when I was in grade school, we used to hang out along the river by the BDI, the Bridge Drive-In. I saw a canoe along the bank of the river. So me and a friend got it home. Parents made us call the police. The police took it away. A few months later, my parents got a phone call from the police saying, hey, no one's claimed it, so it was ours. And when you're 12 years old, Hal, you have struck gold. When you find the canoe and the police say nobody's claimed it, it is yours. Thank you for getting us going, Wayne. And then it wasn't very long ago, Uber's been doing this for, I think, 8 or 10 years now. But Uber was just out with a list, I don't know, a week or two ago, the lost and found items. And they find all the boring ones, right? Clothing, luggage, headphones, wallets, jewelry, and phones. But then there's the unique stuff, right? And this year's list of unique items that have been lost and found by Uber: a frontal hair toupee, hot sauce, and a breathalyzer together. Together they found the hot sauce and a breathalyzer. A fart sensor, didn't even know that existed. A leaf of an unidentified plant that the customer said was much needed. I wonder what kind of plant that was. Two containers of live spiders and a tray of meat pie, the most unique items. Here's some more. Uber. Yeah, it's the 8th annual list. I knew it was something like that, 8 or 10 years. 8th annual Uber Lost and Found Index. They call it an index. They also found a small rat skeleton prop, a candle that says, see you in court, a tub of surgical implants. Yeah, that was right. Police-grade handcuffs, a live turtle, and more. What's the strangest, weirdest, coolest, most amazing thing you have ever found as we look at lost and found items on the various shows today here on CGOP? We're going to talk in a second here to Kelly Saunders, political scientist at Brandon University. We didn't have time to talk this too much yesterday. We did put it out there, but we didn't have a chance to really dig into it. In the Commons yesterday, Pierre Poilievre, leader of the Tories, official opposition leader, was back in. All of his members were back in. They were so nice to each other. But the day before, it was not so pleasant.
The leader opposite is showing us exactly what shameful, spineless leadership looks like. He shakes the hands of a leader of a white nationalist group, then goes to actively court the support of the group's members and thinks he can get away with it.
That, like everything else he says, is false. When will we put an end to this wacko policy by this wacko prime minister?
No. There are a couple of things which are going on here today, which is not acceptable.
So, day before yesterday, that's what happened. And now, as a listener points out in a text message I just got, Hal, seems funny Justin Trudeau started the whole thing by calling Poilievre spineless, but Poilievre is taking all the flack. We'll see what Kelly Saunders thinks about that. But basically, Polyev is told to change it from wacko. He then said extremist, and then he said radical. He didn't withdraw wacko. He just replaced the word with extremist and then radical, and the speaker said, you're out of here, and then all the Tory members followed him. As I said, they were back in yesterday, and they were so nice yesterday. I don't think that's going to last. Kelly Saunders, political scientist at Brandon U. Good morning.
Morning, Hal.
Hi, thanks a lot for doing this. Your take on this?
Yeah, you know, I think there's plenty of blame to go around, certainly on both sides when we look at the government and the first opposition. It, you know, it's frustrating. I mean, we expect better. We deserve better as voters, as citizens. We have real problems in this country that need real solutions. And to see our elected representatives, again, on both sides, engaging in this kind of childish behavior, no wonder voters are frustrated.
Yeah, but this is nothing new, right? I mean, when I first heard the story and I read that Polyev had called Trudeau wacko, I thought, well, you know, and then we got more details. But at first, I just kind of thought, well, this is sort of business as usual, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, Parliament is a tough place to be, especially during question period. I mean, it's we call it the, you know, the theater of politics, right? Or political theater in the sense that it is a big show. It's done in front of the media. Parties are really talking to their base and to their supporters and potential supporters. They're not really engaging in thoughtful answers or questions or really trying to solve big problems. So there's always a bit of that. But I think, you know, for me, what struck me is different this time is, number one, we usually don't see leaders of the opposition actually ejected from Parliament. So
right.
Things seem to have crossed a little bit of a line there. But I think the other thing that really frustrated me is, you know, as I said a moment ago, I mean, we have real serious problems in this country. Canadians are really struggling across the board. And, you know, so now more than ever, we need some good ideas and good solutions and people just to start acting like grown-ups and fix some of these problems. So I think, you know, the particular climate right now, it just amplifies just how unacceptable and childish all of this is.
And that is so true, right? That there are real big issues that need to be dealt with. But here's why I think this is going to continue. And as I said, they were nice to each other yesterday, almost too nice. I don't think that's going to last because, like it or not, Polyev, and this is the way he's been treating the Prime Minister in the House of Commons and outside of the Commons, it's working. They've got a double-digit lead in the polls, so he's not going to stop.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is working, right? And I mean, we have a new term in political science, rage politics, right? And this is really what we're seeing happening is the Liberals are backed into a corner. There's major problems happening, and they don't seem to have solutions or to really be showing the kind of leadership I think that Canadians want and need on addressing these big problems. So they're, you know, what happens when you're backed into a corner, right? You start getting scrappier. You start getting emotional, you kind of lose your focus a little bit. And then for Polyev, yeah, I mean, he's tapping into the frustration and anger that a lot of Canadians are feeling. He doesn't have a lot of good solutions on his own, but that doesn't matter. He's able to really take advantage and really weaponize that anger. And so he's incentivized to keep going, and the Liberals are incentivized to continue to scramble and try to react and not always do so in an appropriate way either. So the situation is really lending itself to this kind of dynamic. And you're right, Hal, it's not going to end. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Is this rage politics a spillover from Trump and what's happened in the U.S. over the past several years?
Well, we're certainly always influenced by the dynamics we see happening there. So no question, you know, that is seeping into our politics. But, I mean, we have enough of our own problems in this country, right? That whether it's the pandemic or the housing affordability crisis or the lack of housing, the affordability crisis, climate change, healthcare crisis. I mean, we have our own problems in this country that are big and difficult and complex. And there's no easy answers, but they're getting worse and worse and really impacting affecting, I think, the daily lives of Canadians in a way that, you know, we haven't seen perhaps to such an extent for a while. So that is amplifying our level of frustration and fear and anger. And then, again, you have politicians that are able to tap into that and take advantage of that. And then we have this perfect storm happening. And let's not forget, we're a year out from an election. So things always kind of get crazy and silly, you know, a year out from an election is, mm-hmm. we saw that happening in Manitoba, right? Is both sides kind of dig in their heels and really go to bat against each other. So a lot, and we've got a minority government in federally. So yeah, there's a lot of things that, as I said, really have come together to create this perfect storm right now.
You mentioned Manitoba. Let me ask you about Manitoba while I've got you, because you were our analyst at Global and CJOB 6-7 months ago in early October when the NDP, Wahb Kanu's NDP, took power here in the province of Manitoba. Almost in contrast to what we're seeing federally, Wahb Kanu is coming off as a really likable politician. He's changing people's tires. I think politically, man, he's astute, and he's done everything right so far. I think at some point Manitobans are going to say, okay, we want to see the results, if they haven't seen the results. But so far, he has done an excellent job, I think, politically.
Yeah, he certainly had, you know, we've been a little bit of an outlier, I think, as you just mentioned. I mean, we see a lot of this anger and rage sort of happening across the country, and rightfully so. As I said, you know, Canadians are really struggling these days, and so, you know, those emotions are understandable. But in Manitoba, yeah, I think it was just, you know, he was able to really create that divide between, you know, the NDP and that aspirational, more positive politics that people really want deep down. We don't want to see our politicians fighting and angry all the time. We have enough to deal with as, you know, as citizens, as I just said. And he was able to really draw that divide between the NDP and the Conservatives, who really did not run an effective election campaign. And we see that, right? They're still scrambling to try to get their feet underneath them. And so I think that the NDP government has had an extended honeymoon period than what we typically see from a new government. But that is going to come to an end. You know, I mean, Manitobans are going to start expecting results. And they've made a lot of lofty, really high-level promises. They're fixing healthcare. They're fixing homelessness. And so Manitobans are going to start expecting that they start delivering on that sooner rather than later. So I think that, you know, we're going to start to see perhaps, you know, some more specific questions and demands happening here that, you know, the NDP have been able to maybe get away from a little bit for the last few months.
Yeah, it helps too that the Tories had a lame duck leader and now no leader. What do you think is going to happen there? They've said we're going to take a whole year to pick a new leader, which is probably the right move.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's pros and cons to that approach, right? I mean, as you said, right now, they are really lame duck. They don't have a leader. I mean, they've got an interim leader, but really not one that's able to really put their stamp on the party because they're just in a caretaker role. So in the meantime, you know, that means the NDP is able to get away with all kinds of things, right? Because there's no real effective coordinated opposition. So that's a danger because that becomes almost structured, you know, into the party. And are they going to have enough time to, you know, another year and a half from now to be able to really regroup before the next election? So that's the risk. But on the other hand, you know, the party does need to really think through where are they going as a party? What are their priorities? What kind of leader do they need to really be able to take them into the future and return them to power? So you don't want to rush into those kinds of things. So it's a bit of a, you know, catch-22 situation they're in right now. And I guess we'll have to wait till the next election to see, you know, whether this strategy of taking a longer perspective is going to pay off for them.
Kelly, thanks for this. Great having you on again.
Great. Thanks, Hal. Take care.
All right. Kelly Saunders, political scientist at Brandon U. Carolyn Klassen joins us now from Kinexus Counseling. Carolyn, good morning.
Hey, Hal. How are you doing?
I'm good. Any good? Well, here's my question. I asked at the start of the show today, what's the coolest or weirdest thing you've ever found? Anything for us on that or not?
Well, you know, my husband and I run an Airbnb at the cottage, and it's amazing what people all leave behind And it's funny, like towels and shoes and toys and blankets and socks. And I often will say, you know, we've got it in here in the city and nobody ever comes and picks that stuff up. So we have miscellaneous bowls and Tupperware and all sorts of things that we have to figure out what to do with. It's sort of fun.
I think sometimes, and I rent cottages too, and I think sometimes people leave things thinking, well, we got this just for the trip out here. We'll leave it for the next people. And yeah, you're by the end of the season, you've got more stuff than you know what to do with.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's just sort of part of what happens is people leave stuff behind.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of losing things, 25% of people, according to this survey, that I saw this morning, 25% of people are worried about losing their job. And I had a thought as I read that. I thought, that's a pretty good big number. You know, a quarter of people worried about losing their job. And it's a relatively new worry, I think, because there was a time not that long ago when you could take a job and keep it for as long as you wanted, decades, maybe work that same job at the same place all through to the time you retire. And this is a new worry, I think, for a lot of people with AI and robotics and everything on the horizon.
Well, yes, my parents are both retired, but they had one single employer each for their entire careers. And they just settled in and worked hard and worked their way up. And now we live in a world where it's changing faster than it feels like we can keep up with, and we don't know what's going to happen. And I think that uncertainty regarding employment is really uncertainty regarding livelihood, right? Because our employment is how we pay our rent or our mortgage, buy our food, groceries, how we live. And so when you have job insecurity, you kind of have life insecurity, income insecurity. And so people worry about that. And I often what has ended up happening when I've worked with people who have lost their jobs is when they have to find a new one, they end up being at one that it's even better for them, or it's a step up, or they're happier with it. And at the time when people are losing their jobs, they never think it's going to work out well. And so I just encourage people to figure out how can you be ready as you can be to keep your resume up to date, to be looking on the horizon for new opportunities so that if you need to make a job, it can be on your terms rather than just waiting for life to happen.
Mm-hmm. I also think people's expectations are different too. They don't go into a job expecting to be there for decades, right? I mean, they're ready to go. But I just had that thought as I read that number, 25% of people worried about losing their job. That's a relatively new worry. We had a guy in from Charleswood on earlier, and he is in the area where this huge garage has been built without previous approval, and it's what everybody's talking about down at 510 Main Street at City Hall and in Charleswood, and really right across the city now as this story is in our news. And I got thinking about neighbors behaving badly. I lived in I'll just tell you where I lived. I lived on Claremont, and I had a neighbor who reported me to the city. They said, oh, he's got a tree that's got disease. And I fought the city. I had a guy from a tree company that was a 100-year-old tree. Guy from a tree company that said, we can save it. We can do this, this, and this. And it was going to cost me a fortune, but I wanted to save the tree. And that neighbor wouldn't bend. The city wouldn't bend. And Carolyn, I was so PO'd about it, I moved. Mm. That's how mad I was.
Wow.
Because we had a plan to save the tree, and this guy next to me on Claremont caused me nothing but trouble, and to the point where I just said, I'm out of here. So how do we better, I should have asked you this before I moved, how do we better get along with our neighbors, Carolyn?
Well, let me tell you, I have a deck and fence builder in my life, and the discussions around fences, which are between people's yards, and who's going to pay, and how high should it be, and how are they going to collaborate on it, sometimes it goes really well, and other times it is incredibly sticky. A person's home is their castle. It's their safe base and secure haven. And so when you're having conflict with the neighbors, people take it really personally because this is your safe space, and now your neighbor is having it feel unsafe. And so you can get a lot of big reactions. And I think the challenge is to figure out if you can make it work, like how can you make it right, not necessarily be right, because the passion between neighbors when you're dealing with your home, which is your safe place, people's emotions, intentions, it can get really high really fast. And sort of casual, friendly conversations to work things out over the fence, or better yet, over a beer on somebody's patio. If you can find a way to sort of bring the temperature down and find a way to connect, I think it's really important to figure that out, because if you're in that home, you're stuck with the neighbors you've got.
Yeah, true. The bond between siblings. Today is Brothers and Sisters Day. And sometimes that bond can be so strong, and sometimes it can be like trying to push two magnets together, you know, and they're forcing themselves apart. I just thought it was maybe worth a quick thought or two from you on Brothers and Sisters Day.
Well, happy Brothers and Sisters Day to all the listeners out there. And I speak as somebody, my older brother literally skipped kindergarten and was at the top of his class, an overachiever. Like, he was a hard act to follow. And so I am aware of how siblings can shape our lives because of our birth order and who was above or behind us. And I think it's really powerful to think about our brothers and sisters are probably, they're going to be the longest relationships we will have in our lives, because they begin at birth. And likely will last longer than the ones that we have with our parents. And so we have to figure out how we can harness them, because they are complicated and nuanced and fraught with all sorts of multi-generations of, you know, relationships and challenges. And so they're so intense, and they can be so powerful, that if we can figure out how to harness them for our good, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. We started with the survey about 25% of people being worried about losing their job. Let's end with another survey. This one says, and I'm really curious to think if you think there's anything to this. It seems like a bit much to me, but listen, as somebody who kisses his spouse every morning and I look forward to it, that's how my day begins. And if my day doesn't start with that, it's not a very good day as far as I'm concerned. But this survey says kissing your spouse goodbye in the morning leads to less loss of work due to illness, fewer car accidents on the way to work, up to 30% more earnings at that job, and you will live potentially 5 years longer, all by kissing your spouse goodbye in the morning. Do you buy it, Carolyn?
Well, yes and no. I buy it that they're correlated. I don't know that there's a causation to it. And what I mean by that, it's a bit of a canary in the coal mine. When you are kissing your spouse before, as you start your day, before you go off to work, it means that you have a certain sort of relationship and that you're intentionally connecting and that you've done the work to be able to be in a place where you want to kiss each other before work, or where you have the discipline where there's a day where what happened last night doesn't particularly make you want to kiss, but you're going to do it anyways, and then figure out how to make it right when you get home. If you're in a meaningful, quality relationship with your partner, it leads to you being better in your life. It leads to a happier, healthier life. Absolutely. We know that when people have better relationships in their lives, and often the partner is the primary, you know, relationship in a person's life. If you can figure out how to make that an asset in your life, you will live longer. You will be more optimistic at work. You will be able to show up. Your boss will recognize that and promote you. It will make it, you'll be able to take bigger risks. You'll be healthier. Absolutely. That kiss in the morning is a powerful indicator. And if you can get yourself to a place where it makes sense to do that, it will make a big difference in your life.
Thank you, Carolyn. Talk to you next Thursday.
Do take care.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.